A hospital. A place where you generally don't like to go, but are glad that it's there when you need it. A place that smells of disinfectant. It's called clinically clean. And then, multi-resistant bacteria, hospital germ. A place where you are supposed to get well becomes a threat to your health from pathogens that are often so persistent that there are hardly any effective drugs against them. How can that be? And above all, how can we deal with it? Professor Susanne Häusler and her molecular bacteriology research group at the HZI and the TwinCore in Hanover are investigating this. In this episode, we talk about the clever strategies bacteria use to become multi-resistant hospital germs, how ways of dealing with them are being researched, and what we can all do to protect ourselves and vulnerable patients from them.
Hi, Susanne. How does the life of a hospital-acquired multi-drug-resistant bacterium look like?
Maybe it's a good idea to start to think about not so much the bacterium and whether it's a hospital bacterium, but about hospital-acquired infections. Mm-hmm. Because the hospital-acquired infections can occur or can be acquired in different ways. So you can acquire an infection due to a pathogen that has been surviving in the hospital, as an example, in the sink, in the drains, then the bacterium is really a bacterium that has been living in the hospital and has been also exposed to many antibiotics. But you can also acquire a hospital acquired infection by having contact with a patient, either directly or indirectly, that is infected. So you acquire a pathogen from another patient. But you can also get infected with your own bacteria that you might bring into the hospital. And the thing here is that once you're in a hospital, and a classical example would be a surgical procedure, and you have a wound, and this wound gets infected after the procedure. And this infection might occur with your own skin flora. This is also a hospital-acquired infection we have to deal with.
How do you know that a patient is infected with such a resistant hospital pathogen?
When we stick with the example of a wound infection, this is normally you see the clinical signs, very typical. So redness, swelling, and pain. It might even get you can get a purulent secretion, which is a sign of a bacterial infection, and the wound will not heal. So the physician might then take a sample, and send it to the microbiological diagnostics lab, where they then will do a culture from the patient specimen, and they will isolate the infecting agent. And then they will also do antimicrobial resistance profiling on this pathogen. And then they will tell the physician whether the physician can give the patient, if necessary, a certain antibiotic, on what drug is still susceptible and what antibiotic is resistant.
Mm. And how is the situation in Germany and maybe compared to other countries?
The situation in the clinic and when you deal with hospital-acquired infection is very much dependent on what are the hygiene control measurements and the preventive activities that are implemented in the hospital. What is the standard? And the standards vary a lot between different hospitals and different regions and different countries. So in general, you can say that in the north, you have lower hospital-acquired infection, or the rate of hospital-acquired infection is much lower, whereas in the south, they are higher. So in Germany, roughly, we have 500,000 nosocomial infections that are reported each year.
Okay. And you're specialized on the bacterium Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Why this particular pathogen?
For us, Pseudomonas aeruginosa is a perfect model organism. And we are interested in a model organism that causes problematic infections. And Pseudomonas is problematic because it's naturally resistant against a lot of different antimicrobial agents. And it also has a large variety of different virulence factors. And they help in causing disease. So Pseudomonas can cause very severe acute infections. And Pseudomonas is also a pathogen that can cause chronic infections. And they are very different. The problem is more not so much acute and severe, but a problem with therapy. They are very, very difficult to treat.
Mm. Where does it occur? And which conditions does it become dangerous for us?
Pseudomonas is a pathogen that can be found ubiquitous across the world, everywhere in the environment. It needs a little bit of water, but then you can find it almost everywhere.
Mm.
But you can also find it in the hospital. And in the hospital, it's mainly in the drain, so it needs a little bit of water. You find it in the bathrooms, in the drains. Pseudomonas aeruginosa is not really a dangerous pathogen. It's a very typical opportunistic pathogen. This means that it's not dangerous for healthy individuals, but it can be can cause very severe infections in compromised patients. And compromised patients for Pseudomonas infection are mainly patients where you have broken the first physical barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So Pseudomonas has problems in overcoming the first physical barrier. And if you help them, for example, in intubated patients, then Pseudomonas can cause a lung infection. Or patients that have a catheter in the urinary tract, they can then suffer from urinary tract infections. And the same also in wounds. The skin is a very good physical barrier. It helps to protect against Pseudomonas infections. When you have a wound, this physical barrier is broken, and Pseudomonas can cause very severe wound infections that often become chronic, and this is mainly associated with the bacteria forming biofilms in these wounds.
I think biofilms primarily we know it as a layer of slime, for example, on boats that lie in the water. But what makes the biofilms of hospital pathogens so dangerous?
The bacteria produce the slime themselves. It's a it's a polysaccharide, and it's a physical barrier that protects them very well from the immune system, but also from very different environmental insults. And that's also when you see biofilms in nature. This is mainly physical insights, so heat and sun, and so. And this is a very good protection. It also helps to protect against the immune cells. But it's also important. The slime is sticking the bacteria one to the other, and then usually also the whole bacteria population onto a surface, and that is localizing them in a certain place in the body, mainly on abiotic surfaces.
Mm.
And at the same time, this shielding leads to a difference in the growth behavior of the bacteria. So they grow much, much slower in these shielded exopolysaccharide encased biofilm communities. And that's very important because they change their metabolism. The metabolism becomes slower. And then the antibiotics that usually need a fast-growing bacteria to act perfectly, they are less efficient. And that's our problem. Biofilm bacteria, once biofilms are formed, is really difficult to treat.
Okay, I think that is the biggest challenge, also in the clinic, when fighting bacterial infections,
Yeah, that's a very big challenge, yeah. So they're not really very good solutions in the clinic.
Mm.
So we currently, and we and others, researchers, think about whether there's a way of somehow awakening the bacteria so that they grow faster again. And then you can target them again with our classical antibiotics, because our antibiotics, in fact, are very, very good.
Mm.
But in certain situations, either you are too late, you treat too late, it's a big challenge, or the bacteria are in these biofilms, they are not really exposing themselves to the antibiotic, and that's a problem.
Okay. You also lead a research group at TwinCore, the Center for Experimental and Clinical Infection Research. This is a site of the HZI, where was set up together with Hannover Medical School. What are the benefits of that cooperation with the medical school here in Hannover?
Yeah, we are very happy to have also a part of the research group at the medical school, and not only at the HZI, where we have access to really good infrastructure and we do a lot of sequencing of bacterial genomes, and that's really something that we do at the HZI. But the group at the MRH has a closer contact, especially to the medical microbiologist at the medical school, and that's important. We also get a lot of clinical samples, also bacterial strains, from the medical microbiologist, and this is very important for our research. And we also talk to clinicians at the site.
Yeah. Okay. How can you better diagnose bacterial infections, these bacterial infections? And what do you need for this? And maybe what's missing yet?
Yeah. At the moment, the classical medical microbiological diagnostics really relies on having a sample and culturing the bacteria from the sample. This takes a lot of time and it's also very labor intensive. So we think the future will be really going into molecular diagnostics. We will probably read out bacterial genomes. And by doing that, we will be able to predict whether they are antibiotic resistant or whether we can treat them still with certain classes of antibiotics. So this will probably be the future, and we are really working on making this happen.
Mm-hmm. You also set up a laboratory in Copenhagen. What exactly do you examine there, and how often are you there?
Yeah, we have a lab in Copenhagen since 2019. Mm-hmm. And in the first 3 years, I really have been there at the Rigshospital, that's the university clinic in Copenhagen. And the main aim here is to establish a pipeline so that we get the clinical isolates from the hospitalized patients, and we get a lot. We get probably 80% of these clinical isolates.
Wow.
We get them into our lab and we do whole genome sequencing also in an automated process. We do whole genome sequencing on them. And we roughly sequence 1,000 isolates per month.
Crazy. And this is the researcher side, but what can physicians and nurses do to prevent resistances?
Yeah, the main thing in the hospital or also outside the hospital is to be aware that once you give an antibiotic, you give the bacteria the chance, or when they are exposed to the antibiotic, they need to develop strategies in order to still survive. So the major thing is to really reduce antibiotic use. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing. But when you give an antibiotic, when you decided this is an important treatment for the patient, then you really have to stick to the dosage and also to the correct time interval that you give the antibiotic. That's really important. And the other important thing is, of course, we have in the hospitals, we have to care and do a lot about stopping transmission.
Mm.
Yeah. And this is, of course, hygiene. Mm. Yeah? So hygiene is a very, very important thing. And hygiene in the hospital means mainly hand disinfection.
Mm.
This is the thing.
Has your work changed your own hygiene standards in everyday life?
Actually, not so much, because I know we are not exposed to very dangerous bacteria. So most of what we have been talking about, these are opportunistic infections, meaning that you have to have a certain predisposition. But of course, it also happens in daily life that you cut yourself and you have a wound, yeah, and then you have to care for that this wound is properly dealt with and is not exposed to an infection. Maybe I know a little bit better about how important this is, but actually I think people know. So no, not really that we do something different, because we are not very much exposed as healthy individuals to infections.
You're researching very, very, you spend very much time for your research. And But I think you also need some kind of work-life balance. What is important for you in your free time? How can you relax?
I love to stay with my family. I really love to be around my husband and my two daughters. And I have a large garden. I love gardening and being in nature.
Nice. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.